That's going to affect USello, as Patrick has said, at the sell barn. That's going to be bit into them. But also just economic loss to the industry.
That's Trey Patterson with the Padlock Ranch. He and Patrick Linnell with Cattle Facts join me today as we discuss the details of a guide to coal cattle management called Right Way, Right Time. Now, our initial discussion begins with looking at practices that lead to a general loss to our overall industry financially and with the consumer.
If we're not standing behind ethically what we say we're doing, it just leads to more and more regulation.
So beyond being proactive in our physical management of these coal animals, how do we maximize their marketing potential?
The coal cow market is about as predictable and consistent of a seasonal pattern as you'll find in any market.
It's all in the title when it comes to coal cattle management. Right Way, Right Time. On this episode of the Working Ranch Radio Show. And we welcome you to the Working Ranch Radio Show. I'm Justin Mills, your host. Thanks for joining us on our program. By the way, if this is your first time listening to our program, first of all, thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoy it. And if you do hear something, you want to go back and listen to it again, you can go to our podcast site at workingranchradio.com. Now, I also point that out, too, because we have a lot of great episodes that have happened over the last 2 to 3 years. I'm trying to think how long I've been doing this, and it's been a few years now, and a lot of those shows do have are shows that have applicability at any point in the year, any time of the year. And I encourage you to go back and listen to it, kind of a encyclopedia of resources, so to speak, on the internet, that you can go back and listen to shows that address different topics. And I encourage you to go back and take a listen to that. You can also catch our show on any major or minor podcast platform out there as well. And do us a favor too. If you hear a show, you like it, give us a thumbs up or a comment out there. That's always helpful, not only to us, but it's also helpful to other people that might be flipping through and they see comments or thumbs up or maybe a thumbs down on the show. It's helpful for folks listening. They can go back and get some of those shows that have seemed to draw a lot of attention. So that's kind of the plug for our show here, but let's get to our topic here at hand. Just a quick note, side note before we do that though, is be sure to listen through the show as well, as the captain, Tim O'Byrne, editor of Working Ranch Magazine, will be in for this week's edition of Tim's Two Cents. And of course, meteorologist Don Day will also be stopping in with a look at our long-term weather. So as we look at our subject at hand, as you heard there in the opening, we are having as our guest here today, Trey Patterson, President and CEO of the Padlock Ranch, as well as Patrick Linnell, Director of Market Research for Cattle Facts, joining us as guests. Guys, thanks for joining us here today on the Working Ranch Radio Show.
Very glad to be here.
Thanks, Justin. Happy to be here.
Well, as we dive into our subject here today, we're looking at something that was released out to producers called The Right Way, Right Time, A Guide to Coal Cattle Management. A very interesting document. I thought it was very practical, very applicable to our industry. And Trey, I know you were part of this initial process as you were involved through BQA in getting this out. And so explain what sort of propagated that. What was the reason for putting the effort into this documentation and getting this information out for producers?
Well, as we rolled out the results of the 2022 National Beef Quality Audit here this last year, really rolled out in 23, you know, we looked at the non-fed side, these coal cows and bulls. And one of the things that stood out is, man, we've made a lot of good progress in the industry, but there's still some things that we need to pay attention to, that we need to work on. And this was really put together as a brainstorming between Beef Quality Assurance Program and the staff there with National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and then a working group that was comprised of producers, veterinarians, academic folks, and then partnering with Cattle Facts and Patrick to highlight how important these coal cows and bulls are for us to focus on in our industry.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you talked about this coming off of that audit, and that was, as you said, we'd made some pretty good progress in our industry regarding the audit, or some of the things that the audit had revealed in our industry over the many years since we've been doing this. But there were still some surprises in this, and what you pulled together with this documentation really is kind of addressing some of those specific things that really, as a producer, since we're not the ones at the end of the chain on this, we don't really see some of that stuff. And it's really bringing that to the forefront is what I'm gathering in this.
Yeah, that's right. We just wanted to draw a new focus to this cold cow and bull management. You know, I think sometimes in our industry, cold cows and bulls can somewhat be a bit of an afterthought. They're like an old used car that doesn't have a very good trade-in value for many people. And we're sitting there looking at this saying, really, they're not. These are animals, they're living beings. They need to be treated right. We're concerned about them from a care standpoint. So that's one part of it. The other part is that they contribute significantly to our beef supply. And so there's this beef quality aspect, but they also have tremendous economic value to ranching operations. And so really a big part of this was just bringing to light that these cattle are not an afterthought. They really should be a focus of our strategic planning and our operations, because they're really important to us.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking about that, a thought that came to my mind too, and I think one of the things that we in agriculture have realized that we have to do, or else we're going to continue to be and stay on the chopping block when it comes to a lot of the different social issues or agendas that are out there, and that is we have to be proactive in this. That's kind of what I'm seeing in this, is some proactiveness. And, you know, I mean, right off the gate, we talk about animal welfare and well-being. Being proactive for our industry, that's part of what we as ranchers need to be doing as well.
Oh, man, I couldn't agree more. I think we need to be able to look ourselves in the mirror and know that we're good stewards of these animals that we've been entrusted to shepherd, but also be able to look our customers in the eye and say, man, you can trust us that we do care for these animals, that we are doing everything we can. And it doesn't matter if it's a newborn calf or a 13-year-old cow that's leaving the herd. These animals are important to us, and you can feel good about the products you're eating, whether it be a steak at the nice steakhouse you're dining at or a burger at a fast food chain. The source of that food came from ranchers that care deeply about the animals and the land, and just be able to communicate that stewardship is really important. And a lot of that's what, you know, the proactiveness is what beef quality assurance has been about from the beginning. It's looking at data, scientific-based information, saying, man, we're leaving some things on the table. How do we get out in front of this? And just look at, you know, for instance, what's happened with injection site lesions. Mm-hmm. And this audit was no different. That was a big issue when we started this program. And now it's still important. We still highlight it, but a much smaller issue. So we're just kind of continuing down this path of improvement. And that's what this document was really about, to help us stay on that course.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Well, guys, let's take a break here. And when we come back, we're going to start getting into some of those specific things. There are also similarities to some things that we saw in that latest audit that come out. And as we address those, I want to go and work through those as we continue through this. Really, the what we're trying to draw here as folks, as you're listening here, is the fact of addressing and understanding, as Trey was talking a little bit, there's value in this coal market and this bull market, bull market as well, and understanding that, you know, just thinking them as an afterthought, there's more to that. We're going to get into some of those specific things later on, talking about how we can increase the value in it. There might be some dollars you've been leaving on the table. We'll talk about that. Patrick Linnell also joining us with Cattle Facts, and Trey Patterson also our guest here today. As we head to break, this section brought to you today by Inherit Select from Zoetis. Don't miss your chance to save on genetic testing. Unlocking genetic potential starts with a complete picture of your commercial cow herd. Learn how to get started with Inherit Select at beefgenetics.com/radio. We'll be back after this.
What if your commercial beef herd could be better than you thought possible? Genetic testing can help give you more confidence about what your herd is made of, and more importantly, what it can be. Inherit Select from Zoetis provides data-driven genetic insights to help you make more informed selection, breeding, and culling decisions about your cows and heifers. The journey from genetic potential to reality begins with Inherit Select. Ask a genetics rep how to save on testing with our whole herd promotion. Go to beefgenetics.com/radio.
Welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. I'm Justin Mills as we continue on now with our guest today, Trey Patterson with the Padlock Ranch, Patrick Linnell with Cattle Facts, and we are talking about a guide to cull management called Right Way, Right Time. It was published by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Cattle Facts, put together through the BQA. A lot of this information that come out of addressing the BQA audit, the last BQA audit in this. And as we were talking with Trey in the first segment, giving us a little history as far as where this came from, why this has been put together for us as ranchers. Before we get back and looking at some of the specific things that we're addressing in this cull cattle management, and let me just say, as I bring in Patrick Linnell now, who is the director of market research for Cattle Facts, really, Patrick, at the end of the day, as Trey was saying and I alluded to as we tailed out of the last segment, just thinking of our cull animals as like this afterthought, like it's just almost a pain for us to deal with, is really a mindset that we need to move away from and know that there is value in these animals.
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And you know, our work on this project and contributing to the Right Way, Right Time guide here and other research certainly supports that. And a lot of, you know, the number that kind of continually pops up is that cull cows contribute about 20% of revenue to the cow-calf operation. And so, you know, simply thinking about that, in theory, cull cow marketing then deserves about 20% of the marketing attention. And the other thing to think about is that cull cows contribute about 20% of U.S. beef production. So, you know, from a quality, high-level industry standpoint, or you know, back home at the individual operation, they certainly do deserve a meaningful chunk of attention. And you know, likely that's even going to remain so, even more so over the next several years here. Mm-hmm. As numbers continue to be cyclically tight, yeah, the market already says it wants lean beef. 90% lean trimmings are at record high prices. Cull cows are at record high prices. It means that the market's going to continue to incentivize, you know, lots of dollars per head and place value on bringing high quality, you know, well-conditioned animals to the market.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things too, Patrick, I think about is we can't be complacent. I realize these calf prices and these cattle prices are high. And I think sometimes we, you know, like, well, we'll just not worry about these cull cows because we're a little more profitable situation. And boy, that's about the worst frame of mind too, to be in.
You're right, Justin. I mean, they're, you know, I think we can certainly get by without paying as much attention, but frankly, there's the most to gain from attention to cull cow marketing today.
You bet.
And, you know, flipping to the other side of, you know, the cattle cycles, which again, we've kind of come through that era of low prices and profits. And at some point, prices will move back lower again. And you know, there can maybe be a little bit less to gain, but that's the period when every, you know, penny is that much more important. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those where, you know, the answer is that it's always important.
Mm-hmm. Trey, let's jump back with you and let's start working through some of these specific items that this Right Way, Right Time guide is basically bringing out and just getting some information in front of our eyes that we can read through that. A lot of times, I think we, as I said to you guys before we started on air here today, some of it's kind of pretty practical, makes a lot of common sense, but then we just don't do it. You know, so when we start with, let's start with animal health, and we have seen more and more people getting more conscious about how they're handling their livestock, and a lot of that kind of stuff all circulates together, and just knowing that having these cows in a healthy, these bulls in a healthy, both physically and state of mind, is important as well.
Yeah, I think it is important. And just, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot in BQA is just having a veterinary client-patient relationship, being able to have a herd health plan from a vaccination standpoint, from an animal management standpoint, to be able to keep animals as healthy as they can. And so that really kind of forms a backbone. And that, you know, I think that's important regardless of your size. You know, we're maybe a more sizable operation, but you know what I tell my people when we talk about this is that if we're going to be excellent, you treat every animal as an individual. We care about every single animal. We care about their well-being. We care about their profit potential, and not look at the at some subgroup of animals like a cull cow or anything for that matter, and as being a write-off that's not, we're not going to worry about it. So yes, from a herd health standpoint, and one thing to point out on the health side is we have to be just as aware of withdrawal times and medications and some vaccines and implementics that are given to these animals that we have to be past withdrawal to be able to sell those. And so that record keeping that goes along with that is really important. I think a lot of times we say, okay, we got all those records on our calves. What about the cows? So just another thing to consider from a herd health standpoint. And along with that goes the animal handling side and just how the animals are handled with as little stress as possible. And one of the things that we see stand out that we've made improvements on, but it's still an issue, is bruising and facilities and the way animals are handled. You know, these animals are big, right? And they're a lot of times mixed with bulls and those type of things. And so these concepts of how do we manage that to get animals at the same size, you know, together when we're moving them and so on, handling those in a low stress manner become very important to this discussion.
You read my mind as you were talking about some other things just a little bit ago. As you were talking about withdrawal periods, I had underlined that and was going to ask you a question on that, but you addressed that and I thought that was interesting as we were talking about that. You know, one of the things I felt for several years, and I don't know, maybe sale barns nowadays more required, I don't know, but I know it seemed like for a long time it's still somewhat of a subjective deal, is fill out that shot sheet, you know, that they give you. As you were talking about the information, have records and know what shots were given and the understanding the withdrawal periods. If you don't fill out that shot sheet information, when it goes to the sale barn, they just have to assume that there's going to be some element of withdrawal that they have to do anyways, and they're going to price that accordingly when they buy that cull animal.
Yeah, I think it's important that we provide that information. You know, as Patrick said, these animals deserve market attention, just like our calves. And I think that's important from a marketing standpoint, but just generating value for the industry. You know, and from a withdrawal type standpoint, there's an ethics thing there. Here's the deal. If we're not standing behind ethically what we say we're doing, it just leads to more and more regulation. And so let's I think all of us as an industry, let's get together and make sure that we're not shipping animals that are within a withdrawal period, and making sure that when we sign those affidavits that they're clean, that they are indeed clean. I think that's really important for us as an industry and our reputation.
Boy, Trey, your comment there about the ethics, I think that just pretty much says the whole conversation we're having about here today, really, when it comes down to it, isn't it?
I think so. I think it really revolves around that.
Yeah. Let's get into the next element, and that is transportation. This has definitely been something that's probably come more to light here in the last BQA audit and the last few, as well as just looking at this transportation and realizing how you need to be handling that part of handling these cull animals.
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned that earlier with, you know, the way these animals are transported. And one of the things that came out of this audit is that compared to prior audits, it looks like producers are doing a better job of giving the animals enough space on the truck. And more than 65% of the transporters of these animals had beef quality assurance training. You know, BQA's got this BQA transportation training now. I think that's really positive. We're moving in the right direction with that. There's still some animals, you know, from this audit that were on a truck for 24 hours. Surprisingly, that's better than some data that we've seen in the past. And so it's not that on any of this that we've arrived, but I think that the transportation is a big deal. And with that kind of background, I think one thing that we really focus on in this right way, right time document is making sure the animals are fit for transport. Meaning, can they make the journey from where they're starting to where they're going to end up? And We can elaborate on that more if you want, but I think that is a really important concept to understand with this.
Yeah. Well, guys, let's take a break here and let's get into that, Trey, when we come back. Let's talk a little bit more about that fitness for transport and explain a little bit more about that and what that means. I mean, I think to other people, I think they'd say, well, yeah, we know if they're not ambulatory, they can't go. But it's more than that. It's more than just that they can't get on the truck or the trailer. It's more than that. And we're going to talk about that. My guest today joining us here on the program, Trey Patterson, President CEO of the Padlock Ranch, Patrick Linnell, Director of Market Research for Cattle Facts. We're going to continue on as we're talking about the Right Way, Right Time Guide to Coal Cattle Management when we come back here on the Working Ranch Radio Show.
Capitalize on crossbreeding with Gel V and Balancer bulls. Raise replacement females with added fertility, increased longevity, and greater productivity. Gel V and Balancer influenced females wean more pounds of calf per cow exposed. In the feed yard, Balancer influenced cattle offer increased performance, improved feed efficiency, and have excellent carcass merit. Balancers add the pounds, make the grade, and deliver the value. Make your crossbreeding count with Gel V and Balancer genetics.
Welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. My guest today, Trey Patterson of the Padlock Ranch, Patrick Linnell with Cattle Facts, as we are talking about the Right Way, Right Time, a guide to coal cattle management. And by the way, we'll make sure we put in our show notes here that link that you can get to that. If you go to our podcast website at workingranchradio.com, we'll put in there the show notes. And then at the end, we'll also give you the details of where you can go online to find that information as well. Trey, when we wrapped up the last segment, we were talking about transportation. Something that really has come to light in the last few BQA audits, but it's something that we address here. You were talking specifically in the last one, transportation and making sure that these animals are not bruised and understanding giving them the adequate space. The other side of that transportation, then, are they beyond just not can they get on the truck or the trailer, but other things that we might be dealing with there when it comes to fitness for transportation? So expand on that just a little bit more.
Yeah, this is a lot more than just being cowboy enough to get them on a trailer. I think we can get that done, right?
Yeah.
This is about getting those animals, make it through the system that they're going to be put through to get to their final destination. And so you think of some animals may go to a collection point, and from that collection point, then go to an auction market, and then from an auction market to a packing facility. There's a lot of handling, a lot of movement that goes along with that. And so, you know, just to kind of put this in layman's terms, and the way that we look at it is we want to think about, can the animals make that journey safely? Are they in good enough condition? Do they have enough energy? Do they have enough mobility that they can stand that truck ride? And so let's say we're getting ready to ship a set of coal cows, and you go to gather those cows into your shipping pen. If you've got cattle that are lagging behind, that aren't keeping up with the others, they have an impaired mobility score. You've got some always these old cows that may be a little bit stiff, but they're keeping up all right. We would call that a mobility score 2. A 1 would be they're just normal. But boy, if they get into a mobility score 3, they're having trouble. You really have to inspect those animals and make sure they're going to be fit. And you've got some that may be what we would classify as a mobility score 4. And those are the ones that keep laying down. Those of you that have worked with coal cows, and you probably have seen that. You get them up, you move them. Yeah, you can get them to move, but then they just lay down right away. That animal's not going to make a trip. And then you've got, when you see these mobility score 3s and 4s, you've got some decisions to make. What is causing that? Is it some kind of a hoof rot or a hoof injury that they can recover from? Then you may have a decision point to retain that animal and get it in a better position to transport. If it's an energy thing and they're just too emaciated, same thing. But if they're not going to recover, then you start talking about, man, maybe as bad as we hate to, maybe it's time to either, if we've got a local packing facility that can handle those animals, you know, we put them in the trailer and in 15, 20 minutes, you know, they could be in a knock box. Mm-hmm. That's a potential consideration if, and I'm kind of maybe getting ahead of myself, if they're safe to enter the beef supply chain. We've got to think about this beef quality side of it too, and our reputation in the industry. But boy, you know, if they're laying down when they get to their final destination, they're going to be condemned. And it causes all kinds of problems at the packing facility. They can't unload cattle on top of them. They've got to get them out there. That is a terrible image for us to portray. And so just trying to squeeze that last little dollar out of some of them need to be humanely euthanized. And we've got guidelines on BQA.org on how to do that. But making sure those animals can make that truck ride from a mobility and a condition, you know, just having the energy to withstand it is important from an animal care standpoint, but also the end supply. I think about it like this when we're shipping cull cows. When I buy that cow and feed it to my family, does that look like a healthy enough animal that I would go put it in my freezer right now? Or is that one that you're saying, God, I hope I can get $100 for her. It's better than nothing. And some other hoser can eat it, you know, in the fast food chain somewhere. That's not right. And so think about it that way, about putting yourself in that personal position, I think. And people will have that mindset. I think it takes a lot of the ambiguity out of that.
Patrick, I want to go to you right now, because this was something as Trey was talking about that there. And yeah, you can, in probably many of these cases that is not fit to be transported, they could be. They can get on these trailers, they can get on these trucks, and they could move out, they could go somewhere. But you're going to end up paying for it. As Trey was alluding to there, it costs our industry in general, but you as a producer, it's going to cost you if you're taking them to the sale barn.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Trey alluded to the challenges of, you know, it's such a case by case scenario of, is there a way to fix this problem with this animal or not? And that's kind of a whole another discussion. But I think it's all pretty obvious to us that those animals that show up to the sale barn, for instance, in rough condition, and it's questionable whether it was as the cow packer buys those animals and takes them to the plant, if it's questionable if she'll be able to make it down those other steps of the supply chain, it's pretty clearly bid into her price.
For sure. All right, Trey, let's move on to the next area. And that's, you know, we start talking about body condition, and that not only is in terms of what physically we see, but even the hanging carcass out there. I mean, the value that we see is just so poor in a lot of ways. But let's talk about body condition.
Yeah, so that was one thing that came out of this 2022 audit is the muscle scores, the number of thin cows, light muscled cows, and which are, it's really correlated to being kind of thin. They started to catabolize muscle, right? Because they've used all their energy reserves. Was the highest it's been in any audit in the last 27 years. Now, some of that was because this audit was conducted when there was pretty widespread drought in part of the U.S. But that doesn't overshadow the point that the value that's lost in shipping those kind of animals, but really the quality of beef that we're putting into the system and the opportunity to add value and to add condition and add comfort to these animals, I think is really, really showcased through that example. And so maybe it's a blessing in disguise, and man, I get it. You're droughted out. You don't have any extra feed. That's pretty tough, right? You're just trying to figure out how to feed the ones you've still got left. But that really gets into this timeliness thing. If you don't have the feed to pick them up, getting them cold out of the herd before they're at that severe emaciated state, I think is really the point we wanted to make here.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to another big thing. And we may not get it all covered in this, what we have left in this segment right here. We can sure move into the next segment if we need to. But let's talk foreign objects. This is something that really, I think one thing that stood out in my mind when I did the interview, I believe it was last year sometime, regarding the BQA audit that came out, foreign objects. And it is just a scratcher in my mind in some ways what we're seeing in these carcasses.
Yeah, I was a little bit taken back by that. You know, the results of this audit, it showed that, you know, the percentage of plants reporting foreign objects, that 100% of those, that doesn't mean 100% of the beef or that it was every day, but every plant in the audit reported finding a birdshot or buckshot in animal carcasses. And half of those reported customers complaining about it. That means their customers who take these subprimals to the grind or what or wherever the end product is complained about finding it in there. Tremendous economic loss to the industry. All that product has to leave. And evidently, it's hard for me to get my mind around, but evidently there are people that are using birdshot in shotguns to move animals, get them out of brush piles, to get the neighbor's bull off of you, whatever. And to me, that is completely unacceptable. Mm-hmm. I think we've got the procedures in place in our industry that, you know, thankfully these aren't ending up on the kitchen tables or in your box of burger you buy, but dang it, that's a tough thing as an industry. And I think we just want to be right out in front of that and say, man, this is unacceptable. And we hope bringing attention to it would really highlight that for people that you can't do this. Mm-hmm. And people think, well, that doesn't get through the hide. It obviously does. I mean, we've heard from people on the purveying end, the packing end, that it darn sure does. It's in the product. In a lower percentage, there's still some reports of other foreign objects, you know, like broken needles or things like that. One of the new ones that popped up were the darts, were the remote delivery devices, that some of those are ending up, at least not necessarily at all of them, and not in a, we don't know the percentage of carcasses, but they are showing up. The plants have reported that these are showing up periodically, having these remote delivery devices in the carcass. So we've got to really tackle that as an industry.
Yeah. Okay. One real quick thing, Trey, I wanted to hit on this too. And this was something, and partly what caught my attention with it was I had done an interview with Dr. Ty Lawrence at West Texas A&M back his first part of this year, episode 151, 152 on beef on dairy. One of the issues that we were talking about in regards to dairy animals was milk on the carcasses. That in itself is that carcass is contaminated, you know, if there's milk. So the full udder element, that's an aspect to be thinking about as well.
Yeah, that came out in this audit. Like I said, we've made a lot of progress in the defect side in cold cows and bulls, but just almost half of the defects that we did measure was milk contamination from full udders. And that's just taking a tight back cow and sending her right to slaughter. And so if that back breaks, that milk spills, they have to cut that carcass. Anywhere that contamination was has to be cut out. That's going to affect you selling them, as Patrick has said, at the sell barn. That's going to be bit into them, but also just economic loss to the industry. So if, as much as we have any ability to do, letting those cows go through a short dry up period, I think is important for us as an industry.
You bet. Okay, let's take a break here, guys. My guest today, Trey Patterson, Patrick Linnell. Trey is with the Padlock Ranch, and Patrick Linnell is with Cattle Facts. And when we come back, we're going to start talking the economics of it. Patrick has a lot to share with us regarding the economic side of this when we look at this coal cattle management and how that applies to us as ranchers. So stick with us. We'll be back here on the Working Ranch Radio Show after this. Welcome back to the Working Ranch Radio Show. My guest today, Trey Patterson, President and CEO of the Padlock Ranch in Wyoming, and also Patrick Linnell, Director of Market Research for Cattle Facts. We are talking specifically today about right way, right time. Well, what is it? It's a guide to coal cattle management put together through a lot of the efforts, combined efforts of a lot of different entities, really looking at some of the information, as we heard from Trey a bit ago throughout the first part of this program, looking at some of the things that came out of the beef quality audit, the last one, and how can we address that as an industry to be proactive in that, and at the same time understanding that some of these things, if they're not handled, do end up costing our industry in the long run financially, and even in the perspective of the consumer out there, their perception, I should say, in what they think of our product. So that moves us into the element here now, as Patrick Linnell, as I said, with Cattle Facts, is with us. And Patrick, we now jump into the economics of it. As you had said earlier, the coal market, it's something we just can't sneeze about and just pretend it's not there. It's a part of every ranching operation. So let's jump into the economic side of this, from your perspective of this, the importance of understanding how we handle our cull cattle better?
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. And I guess just to jump back and add on, I think, to some of Trey's comments earlier is a great way to start this side of the discussion. A lot of estimates out there, it's literally 50% of beef that's consumed domestically that's consumed in the form of ground beef. And, you know, yes, some of that comes from the fed supply, but a lot of that is coming from the non-fed side and the bulk of it. And so I think from that standpoint, just saying, oh, she's just hamburger is really downplaying something that is important. Mm-hmm. And it's also to the conversation and to the findings on foreign material here, you know, whether it's a dart, a needle, or buckshot that is in that carcass and hits the grinder, and metal detectors, you know, or catch the vast majority of it. But even if it's 99.999, you know, how many nines you want to add on there?
Yeah.
It's a zero tolerance that we need to have as an industry, because you can just think about that one person that eats one burger that has a half of a buckshot pellet in it. I mean, that's a problem. And the consumer loves beef. That's what all the data shows. And why would we want to sacrifice that as an industry by allowing that kind of product to move through the system?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Patrick, one of the things is I hear Trey talking through some of this. There's kind of an underlying thing that's part of a lot of this. And when we look at strategies to add value to these animals, timing really comes down to a lot of this, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. You know, Trey talked about in the challenges with drought and the impact there that likely showed up in this. And, you know, we do often see, is there some opportunities for folks to add weight to cows, add condition? Certainly knowing that, you know, when you are in those drought type of scenarios, that oftentimes you need to be pretty quick to make that decision. And that's just one of those market timing things that when, unfortunately, we do get in those drought scenarios. Mm-hmm. But regardless, setting aside the drought conversation and those situations, the cull cow market is about as predictable and consistent of a seasonal pattern as you'll find in any market. And you know, it really comes down to the fact that in 75% of the nation's cow herd is spring calving, weans in the fall. At the same time, you're in making those preg checking and culling decisions and taking those cows to town. And onto the other side of it, spring grilling demand for burgers tends to be strongest in the spring and early summer timeframe. So you have these supply and demand factors that created just a very consistent seasonal pattern. Mm-hmm. And so what we talked about in the Right Way, Right Time management guide, you know, is really just trying to stimulate thought on how we can take advantage of that very consistent seasonal pattern. And knowing that, again, every cow-calf operation has unique situation. There's no one-size-fits-all approach, but just thinking about, are there some ways that we can take advantage of that seasonality? For instance, you know, from August, September into October, November, cull cow prices typically break around 10% ahead of Labor Day, kind of that line in the sand when the cull cow market starts to move lower. And then to the other side, and if we have some females that were making the decision to cull her from the herd, but she could stand to have some more weight and we have the resources to do so, and she has the ability to do so, then is there a way to hold on to her and you roll her into the new year and kind of get past that Valentine's Day timeframe? The market works past all that heavy volume of cull cows in the fall, and you start approaching that spring grilling. And so, again, maybe it doesn't work. Maybe you don't have the feed resources 1 year, or again, it depends on the animal herself and some management decisions. But just thinking about, are there some ways that we can work that seasonality to our benefit?
Mm-hmm. Patrick, one of the things that is talked about in this guide to cull cattle management is selling late bred cows. And this is where I have to raise my hand sometimes and say, I'm kind of guilty of this, is just, well, we'll keep her one more year, you know, and I think that propagates a lot of different things. Not only potentially can she even make it through the winter, and if she does, how much are you going to have to put into her to get her through the winter? And then, you know, it's there's a little bit of maybe being greedy in some of that, but there's some real opportunity pulling these having a good cull in the fall, selling these late bred cows in the fall rather than trying to just get one more calf out of her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there is always that temptation. And yeah, the important thing to keep in mind is that we don't ever want to be selling the problem to somebody else. But at the same time, if for whatever reason, she just doesn't fit our program anymore, but she's still a cow that has some value as a member of the breeding herd, can we consider marketing her as a late bred cow? And if she falls out of our calving window and what you're trying to manage around, it has a high probability over time that, again, selling her as a late bred female tends to bring more value than her value, just her residual value as a colt cow.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, as you and I talked a little bit ago, right now, the market is really good for us as ranchers. We definitely liking to see what we are seeing in the calf market, in the cull market. I mean, it's crazy. I'm seeing some of these cull bull sales prices about where bull sales prices are at. And it's just kind of crazy. But at the same time, what are your concerns? Do you have any concerns with as this market is moving high and how we are handling our cull cattle?
You know, I think Trey expanded on a lot of the findings of the audit. And I guess the thing that I would suggest that, or I really emphasize that folks keep in mind, that as we have this market at just these kind of levels where in some cull cows bringing over $2,000 per head, again, that just justifies spending some time and investment in her and making sure that we are giving attention to her value. Again, we should always be doing that from an ethical standpoint and from an animal husbandry, animal welfare standpoint. But from a financial standpoint, there's a lot of value at risk here or value to be gained. So just making sure that, again, if that animal starts heading downhill, if we can identify that early and take her to down the supply chain before she starts falling off. Again, just making sure that we don't have to get into that situation of on-farm euthanasia where the salvage value is exactly zero. Mm-hmm. Or to the other side of it, if we can identify that, hey, we can add some more flesh back to her to give her the energy and the flesh to be able to make it through the supply chain, then let's do that. Or again, address some health issues. Again, just making sure that we are able to take her through the supply chain and she's fit to do so. It has a tremendous amount of value, and it's just something that folks can need to make sure to focus on over the next few years, because the market will continue to be a good run for the cow-calf producer. But I think focusing on some cull cow management as well is just one way to really capitalize on the upside while we do have this strong market.
You bet. Well, just one more question, Trey. I'll let you have some final comments as we tail out of looking at this today. A document that has a lot of great information in it for producers. Just read through this. Be familiar with it. I think some of it, if you've done some BQA training, it's going to make a lot of sense. And if you haven't, there's just some things, as I had alluded to earlier when we started talking with Patrick, is just the fact that let's be proactive. This is so we can kind of keep our costs together and within our own industry. And as we head out here, some final comments from you regarding this guide to cull cattle management.
Yeah, I would make one real quick comment here, kind of supporting what Patrick's talking about. And it's a metric that we track in our business. And we look at a metric that is in the numerator, the value received for cull cows over in the denominator, what it cost us to put a replacement cow in the herd, whether that be a replacement heifer or a replacement cow. And we feel if we can keep that ratio at 1-to-1 or greater, it's a leading indicator of our ability to manage depreciation in our herd, because we're getting as much out of the cows leaving or more than the cows that we're replacing them with. And so just to reiterate that, but kind of overall, this is just a real common sense guide to the way we represent our industry, the way we represent our beef supplies, being good stewards of the cattle and being good stewards of our finances on the ranch. And I think it really ties all that together and would encourage people to get this document online and get a read through it. Yeah. I think you'll find it very interesting.
You bet. Well, Trey, Patrick, thanks for joining us here today on the Working Ranch Radio Show.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
You bet. And again, my guest today, Dr. Trey Patterson, President and CEO of the Padlock Ranch, also has been chairman of the advisory committee or group for the beef quality assurance. In addition, our guest today, Patrick Linnell, Director of Market Research for Cattle Facts. And I really think from a perspective of looking at this, you might look at this overall and say, well, really, what does it mean to us as for me as a rancher? What does it matter what I do with my coal animals? And I think if each of us in the ranching industry take that mindset, I think over time, this is some of the things that were brought out in the beef quality audit come out that we see. And this is a way to address some of those kinds of things. And I really think that as we look at our own ranching operations from a business perspective, there's some things that we can pull out of that and realize, are we really doing the best with what we have? Are we being good stewards of what we have? Just a quick tidbit, and I wanted to share this real quick amongst a lot of the other good information we had in there. Something that I wrote down here, and Trey had mentioned this in regards to putting maybe a benchmark in regards to your herd value and managing some depreciation. He said they put an equation together that is the value of your coal cow equal to and or greater than the cost that you're having to do to develop and have put replacements in your herd. And one-to-one, of course, is good if the value of those coal cows are actually higher than the cost of replacements, then you're doing really good. And that was just something I caught. I wanted to bring that back one more time because I know for a lot of us, as we look at this from a business perspective, sometimes we like to have those benchmarks. That's something you can put in, value of coal cow over the cost of replacement, as something you can be looking at as well. Real quick, as we just wrap up this segment, we were talking about the right way, right time, a guide to coal cattle management. You can find that. If you go to our show notes, I'll put a link in there, but also you can go to the website at ncba.org, and there's a producer tab there that you can go in there and you can find this document. You can print it out for yourself and have it read through it, like Trey had mentioned to us, to read through it and just let it kind of filter in and some of your decision makings as you are contemplating what you're going to be doing with your coal cattle here in 2024 and going forward. Well, stay with us when we come back. Meteorologist Don Day will be in with a look at our long-term weather. And Tim O'Byrne, editor of Working Ranch Magazine, will be up next with this week's edition, Tim's Two Cents. We'll be back after this.
Looking for the perfect gift for a gardener or weather enthusiast? Introducing the Tropo, a precision rain gauge that has revolutionized both reliability and convenience. Expertly engineered by meteorologists, the Tropo gauge boasts rugged durability, impeccable accuracy, and precision to the hundredth of an inch. Visit measurerain.com to order a Tropo today and use code RAINDAY, that's RAINDAY, for free shipping and 10% off. Go to MeasureRain.com.
Hey, Justin. Hey, everybody out there in Working Ranch Radioland. Justin, last episode was fantastic. Your guest was Dr. Mike Apley, Kansas State University. I followed Dr. Apley for many years. He has made a great contribution to the industry over time. And you talked about antibiotic resistance of medically important drugs. Folks, go back and listen to that. It was a great episode. I learned a lot. I wanted to do a follow-up clarification on that. Maybe Dr. Apley would chime in. The way I understand it, the human medical chain, the antibiotic resistance can occur in two different ways, and they both kind of involve misuse, I guess you'd say, of the antibiotic. So the first scenario would be where the individual goes to the doctor for diagnosis and prescription of an antibiotic for a bacterial infection. And maybe the prescription is a 10-day course. And after 3 or 4 days, the patient starts to feel pretty good and they just discontinue using it. And that can lead to not completely entirely killing the bacterial load in that particular patient. And so then the remaining bacteria that should have been killed over the 10 days, they kind of mutate and they can become resistant that way. The second scenario would be where the patient goes to the doctor with something that can't be treated with an antibiotic, but they ask for it anyway. And the doctor either just gives it to them, you know, just to make them feel good, or they prescribe it in a certain case where the doctor does not want a bacteria to come in through the back door and attack the patient while they're dealing with a virus or fungus or whatever. And so they will prescribe an antibiotic for that. So I would like some clarification on that, because the way I understand it, both those scenarios are really important part of the puzzle when it comes to understanding the full scope of antibiotic resistance in medically important drugs in the human food chain. Back to you.
All right, thanks, Captain. And I have gotten a hold of Dr. Apley. In fact, we're going to get back together and do another interview just to answer that question. So look forward to hearing his response from that as well. Well, we're going to switch gears now as we turn and take a look at our long-term weather. Joining us, as he does each and every week, is meteorologist Don Day. And Don, as we are moving past this weekend and on into, and not too far from looking out into the month of May, you kind of have a feeling that maybe we're past those real frigid temperatures for 2024, for the spring of 2024.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, we are looking at and have over the last 5 to 7 days some pretty chilly temperatures in some parts of the U.S. They just have gone through a big cold spell across parts of the Great Lakes in the northeastern United States, and some colder weather has been found across the northern plains. Even a little bit of snow has gotten all the way down here recently to Interstate 70. But we are going to see a large-scale warm-up that's going to go west to east across the nation next week. It'll start in the west and expand as we go into the Midwest and Corn Belt and Great Lakes by the middle to the end of next week. So folks are going to get back into some springtime weather again. And when you start looking at the calendar, well, we're going to be into May here before you know it.
I know.
And it does look like the Pacific is going to want to keep at least the lower 48 in a mild pattern for the beginning of May, although that doesn't necessarily mean dry. I think we're going to have plenty of episodes where shower and thunderstorm activity in many areas of the nation will be possible. And as we've talked in over the last couple of weeks, this is severe weather season, and we always have to look out for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, looking at the latest U.S. drought monitor map, even though we have seen some moisture move across parts of the country, I was surprised actually at just how much areas on that map are still showing some dryness.
Yeah, there are some areas showing dryness. Now, some of those areas that I think you're a little bit surprised may be due to the fact that there's been some data problems with some of the computers that keep track of precipitation across the U.S. So I think you may start to see some improvements on next week's map. Mm-hmm. But to your going back to your point, with that being said, we still have some pretty big soil moisture deficits over a large part of Iowa, eastern areas of Nebraska. If you look at Kansas and eastern Colorado, they've started to trend drier. While the northern parts of New Mexico have had a pretty wet weather, there's a large part of New Mexico and far west Texas that are showing some drought areas. So, yes, there are some areas that are dry. We've also had a drier pattern develop this winter across the northern plains. Although I'll say this, from what we're seeing in the long range charts, mm-hmm. I think some of those drought areas that we have now have some good chances of getting some spring moisture here in the weeks ahead.
All right. Well, Don, appreciate the update. We'll see you next week.
See that.
You bet. And you can find meteorologist Don Day each and every morning through his daily video podcast at dayweather.com. Stick around. We'll talk about what's in store for next week's edition of the Working Ranch Radio Show after this. Well, coming up on next week's show, I'm basically going to be sharing with you conversations that I've had looking at a couple different products for our own ranching operations that might be useful to you all as well. Now, these products are totally unrelated, but the first one is going to be with 701X. Now, they do the GPS tags that you can put in livestock, and I'm kind of looking at that just a little bit, maybe in my bulls. The other one is the product called Ferapeace. Now, it's a maternal bovine appeasing substance. It's an all-natural product that you can put on the nose and the back of the poll of animals, and it keeps their stress levels down. Kind of interested in that and thought you might be as well. So tune in on next week's show as we look at those two products. Well, the Working Ranch Radio Show is a production of Working Ranch Magazine, branded number one by America's Ranchers. If you hear something you like, give us a thumbs up or a comment. We appreciate that. My email address is justin.workingranch@gmail.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Justin Mills, and until next time, keep your chin down and your mind in the middle. So long.